everybody. Welcome to Pet Theories. I'm Eve Rometta, and with me, as always, is my engineer, Ephraim Oshinsky.
Hi, everybody. Today, we're going to talk some true news for pets, new laws that dogs and cats should be aware of, as well as some of your questions, including more poop questions. I mean, we knew this was going to happen when we started the show, so we're diving in. I'm going to choose a different metaphor for that. We're forging ahead. And now it's time for
news
for
dogs.
All right, so this first one comes from Scotland. A lot of dog research seems to come out of Scotland. Didn't we? Huh. Oh, it was the crows last episode that was a Scottish researcher.
Oh, right, the crows.
So they got a lot of good biologists in Scotland, I guess. These ones have maybe...
They didn't forget about me, but I forgot about the crows. Yeah. Crow joke. Go ahead. Never mind.
The audience can't hear me shaking my head. So the Scottish SPCA, RSPCA, I guess, Royal, right? Anyway, their welfare...
I think that's probably intentional.
Actually, I was just racking my brain as I was reading it, trying to remember if when I edited and threw these notes together, I deleted the R. Like if I had typed SPCA.
Oh, no.
Or if that was in the story. Anyway, they're in partnership with the University of Glasgow and a rehoming center in Dumbarton. Rehoming center, by the way, is a great way of saying an animal shelter.
Yeah. Well, it implies new homes.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they found that that dogs love reggae and lame soft rock.
Well, okay. I can see how that would seem that way, but our dog hates reggae.
I don't think our dog hates reggae. I think she just doesn't like explosion noises. And a lot of the reggae I'm partial to involves a fair amount of mooing cow noises and explosion noises.
Well, she seems to definitely be upset by the mooing cow noises.
Yeah.
That really seems to upset her.
I think our dog dislikes the loud, booming, rattle your teeth reggae, which happens to be 90% of the reggae she hears, and also happens to probably be about 2 or 3 hours a day. Once you're done listening to this podcast in an hour's time or so, if you remember, just look up some Lee Perry and enjoy some cow mooing noises.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did studies. First of all, it's not just the reggae thing. It's the fact that these dogs have different musical tastes. They found that just like people, they wanted to see if dogs responded to different kinds of music. So they play them, hard rock, metal, reggae, classical music of various kinds.
Sure.
And they found that different dogs seem to respond differently to music. And how they tested this was heart rate.
Sure.
Hormones in their saliva, other stress signs,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not they barked at strangers. So dogs who listen to metal going in the background, more likely to bark at strangers.
Right, right.
Right, and be like, ah!
I would argue that about people, too.
Yeah. More than any other music, it seemed like it was reggae that the dogs really chilled out and relaxed to and felt comfortable around people. That and Fleetwood Mac.
Well, is this like old Fleetwood Mac, or is this did they really just love some Peter Green? That's pretty similar to reggae with just grooving out. You think this is just rumors? The dogs have real heartbreak. Well, they've been in a shelter, so they've been, abandoned, and someone's turned their back on them and left them for somebody else. Rumors could really hit home for all these dogs.
Yeah.
So, maybe that's it. Maybe it was more the deep lyrical content of the Fleetwood Mac that was getting the dogs.
If we talked for half an hour last week about how dogs don't understand words, man. Don't confuse me.
Just saying.
Oh, I'm so confused now. Do they read the lyric sheet?
They can just feel Stevie Nicks' pain.
It's funny. This actually also goes back to last week's discussion about whether dogs understand TV. So there you go. If cats understand TV, right? Because they can follow those lasers around. TV's just lasers.
Well, I guess technically.
I think actually what it might be is that when it comes to tastes...
There's no accounting for it?
No. No. There is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that's most of the internet, right?
Yep.
Is accounting for tastes. Anyway.
Speaking of which, make sure to rate our podcast on iTunes.
Yeah, please. People say it helps the show, although I've read articles saying it doesn't, so I have no idea. But hey, it makes people more likely to hit subscribe, right?
Yep.
So thank you for everyone for in advance for rating the show. Go do it now while you're listening to us. You're probably in front of a computer or a phone or just a blackboard where you could just write
that
word.
Sure.
Great.
Yeah. That works too.
She was @PETTHEORIES. No, I was going to say, I think it might just be that, like, when it comes to tastes, dogs are very daddish.
Okay.
You know, they just kind of like lame, boring stuff.
Like reggae.
Thanks, Eve.
Yep. But what about cats?
So I wanted to look up,
right,
seeing the study, I wanted to see if maybe there were studies on cats. And sure enough, there are some. One was actually really interesting. This is less about cats specifically, although they use cats than animals in general. But it was out of the University of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. There's a psychologist who had this hypothesis that seems like very reasonable.
Okay.
Which is that if you think about the music that humans listen to and like, it's all in the range roughly of human speech. You know,
right, right.
Like an electric bass doesn't go much lower than a big old guy a bass can sing, right?
Right.
And electric guitar doesn't go much higher than like a soprano lady can sing.
Okay.
So they had this idea that maybe animals liked music that was in the vocal register of their own voices, since they're used to listening to each other.
Oh, okay.
Right.
That's really neat.
Yeah. So they tested this on cats,
mm-hmm,
and they found that sure enough, cats don't care about human music. They could take it or leave it.
That's definitely the face that all cats make when I sing around them.
Yep, but they worked with this musician who, mm-hmm, like created music for cats, which I guess was sped up to roughly around, like, you know, where a meow is. Like,
okay.
If you think of that as middle C, I guess.
Sure.
It's really great. Actually, you should check it out at musicforcats.com. It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, as a guy who's into weird music, I have to say this was,
right,
it was really neat. I wish I had written down his name. I'm sorry, guy who does musicforcats.com. Go to musicforcats.com. But the cats actually responded better to it. So it's a tiny little study, but it's just adding a little credence to this idea.
This is also sort of, I guess, Laurie Anderson's last album. Did she actually release an album of this, or just do a couple performances of her music for dogs?
I mean, why not release the album? I think they did. I don't think it was last. I think she's done some stuff since then. I mean, it was
I thought it was pretty recently.
It was when Lou Reed was alive, man. Yeah, so it was a while ago. Laurie Anderson, I guess they...
Of experimental music fame.
Yeah, oh Superman, and the New York scene. Yeah, she and her husband Lou Reed did a concerto for dog. It was a couple songs, and I guess they wrote music that they liked and then kicked it up into a higher register than humans can hear.
Yeah, and then I think they played them for their dogs, and then the stuff that their dogs liked they kept.
Yeah.
But they weren't really sure what it was, because...
Well, I guess they could slow it back down again.
Right.
Sort of like when they slow down like bat echolocation and it sounds like squeaking because they drop it down a couple octaves. It's the same idea. They would just like up it until, you know, it was out of human hearing range. Like those beeping things that old people can't hear and now I can't hear.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah.
That's what they call them, mosquitoes. They say they keep the teenagers away, though.
I love the idea that you can keep children away with like what's basically an electric fence for children.
I've surrounded the house with them.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Although I kind of wonder if the Laurie Anderson music for dog things is annoying, because like, just because dogs can hear it and humans can't doesn't mean that's in the range that a dog wants to listen to stuff at. Like, I always imagine when you blow a dog whistle, the dog goes like, ah, stop! Because it's still really high up in the register.
No, right? That's true. Right? Well, with the dog whistle, it's particularly high up in the register because A, it looks neat when you do it and nothing comes out but a dog comes running.
That's true.
That's just super cool.
That is very true. I didn't think that, you know, some of it's just intimidation factor, right?
Part of that is just like you figure that out and you're like, well, I'm going to do this all the time.
Yeah. Hey, guys, look at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is also that it's purposely that high up so that way it cuts through, you know,
other noise.
Because it's for, you know, hurting.
Yeah, and nothing else is at that register.
Right, so it's for, a collie all the way over on the other side of the field to be able to hear the command. So it cuts through.
Wind noise and baaing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not on any of those other registers, so they know for sure that that noise is like that.
So that wraps up our dog and cat science segment for the week. I still can't get over that crow story from last week, man. That's freaky. So what's our next story?
Our next story is about cracking down on fake service animals up in Massachusetts.
This comes from the Boston Globe.
It's apparently modeled after similar laws in Florida and Colorado. And right. It targets people who use fake service dogs to obtain privileges meant for the disabled, such as the right to take a dog into an airplane without paying a fee, and housing in places where, you know, pets are allowed, or bringing them into restaurants.
Yeah.
Or
concert halls.
Yeah.
The subway, trains, everywhere.
Right.
Bars. Yeah.
Anywhere. And basically taking advantage of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So I know it might not particularly be popular per se, but I am definitely against the trend of just getting a letter from a therapist and buying a vest at a store to bring your dog around with you. Like, actual service dogs are important. Yeah, and
that's what, you know, this bill is designed to do. It's right. It's basically
saying that you can't keep crying wolf for service dogs. You know, it's an important thing that service dogs do, and they need to be able to be let in everywhere. So when people come in with dogs that aren't actual service dogs and they behave poorly, it just makes it that much more difficult for the next person who might actually need their service dog. They're not just for like people who are blind. They're also for veterans.
Yeah,
and,
no. If you're missing
children with seizures.
Yeah,
and, like,
if you're missing
a
leg, it really helps to have a dog around to pick stuff up.
Right. Or even if you just have PTSD. But if you legitimately have these things, then you have a legitimately trained service dog, so you should have no problem with bills
which takes hours and hours, and they estimate about $42,000 to train a service dog.
Well, there's actually this great part of Penn State that's the working dog program where they're working on
that's Penn Vet, right?
Yeah, they study working dogs there, and so they focus on the best ways to train them and new ways to, you know, use them and their health and different ways to work with them.
Unfortunately, there's no registry of service dogs, no national registry. There's no official certification process. Anyone can claim an animal as a service animal, which is annoying. It means it's going to be a little difficult for them to enforce this rule. Although apparently a lot of it's also for shutting down like creepy organizations on Craigslist that sell quote unquote service animals. It's just like some random poor dog.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I'm not even kidding about this. This is real. Like, this actually happens.
No, yeah, I've been in pet stores and seen flyers up for, you know, quote unquote therapists who say they'll write you a letter for your pet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the ADA does have like a definition of a service animal.
Yes.
So it's not completely unregulated. According to the ADA, that's the American with Disabilities Act, it only applies to dogs and mini horses.
I told you they're a big deal for service animals.
And the ADA does not cover psychological support animals, you know, emotional support dogs, comfort dogs, therapy dogs, etc. The bill is being sponsored by Rep. Kim Ferguson of Holden. She's a Republican. So nice to see, as a lefty, nice to see a Republican introducing some good legislation on the state level. But yeah, I'm behind this bill, I have to say. Also, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in this author from the Boston Globe. Admittedly, this is a serious story. But if you are going to bring up turkeys and pigs, like emotional support turkeys and pigs and therapy turkeys and therapy pigs, and these are real stories, I looked them up. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to bring that up, don't make your reader Google that. No. You hotlink that.
I think that's more the editor's fault.
This is true. Yeah. Still, though,
I wouldn't blame the journalist.
That's a good point. A good point.
This is the layout editor's fault.
But yeah, when you have the phrase therapy turkeys, pigs, and monkeys in passenger cabins, you have to link that.
That's fair.
That is three links I want to see. That brings us to our last story. People may have seen this on the news. We're taping this a little early, so a couple weeks ago, about the Santa Monica firefighter who saved this puppy's life, Nanu.
Nalu.
Nalu?
Yeah. A Bichon Frise Shih Tzu.
Those are the little white ones, right?
They're two of the little kind of white ones that are, you know.
Okay, yeah. So the Bichon Frise is like the fuzzy white one.
Uh-huh.
And what's the Shih Tzu?
They're a little shorter and their faces are a little squatter.
So this poor woman, Crystal Lemirande, she just came home from work, comes into her building. Her neighbor says, you know, who lives down the hall, says, the building's on fire. She runs to a firefighter who's on the scene, you know, because they're fighting the fire already. They're there.
Right.
She says, oh my God, my dog's in there. And this dude, Andrew Klein, Santa Monica hero, although he's getting accolades all over the place. He's also got a killer mustache.
No reason for us not to jump on board the Klein train.
Yeah, yeah. Killer mustache. This will be. This will probably be the picture for the week.
Okay.
Of Nalu and this dude's mustache. Mm-hmm. But yeah, runs into the fire, crawls around on his hands and knees to coax the dogs out. Dog out. Dog comes out. By the time he's got him out, he's not breathing. And then he gives the dog like little chest compression and mouth to snout resuscitation for 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. Brought the little guy back.
Yay. thing.
Yeah. Oh God. There's video. I didn't watch the video. I don't wanna see that.
No, that's fine.
So Nalu has spent the last day, or at this point, he's probably out because you're probably listening to this in the future. But he spent the day in an oxygen chamber.
Aw.
And is like back up and around again. He's been coughing a lot. Well, which I hate to say, it is so cute. But he's gonna be okay.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah.
So I know you didn't believe me. The thing that you were most shocked about when you heard this story was that mouth to snout is an actual thing.
Oh, yeah. So he brings the dog back.
Right.
And, you know, the dog is unresponsive. You know, everyone thought the dog was dead. And this dude, Andrew Klein, was just like, no, not today.
Yeah.
In the article, he was like, well, it wasn't an option. The dog was not an option.
You know.
This guy. Firefighters. I wish I could be a firefighter. I'm not that good of a person.
No.
I wish I was that kind of person. So for 20 minutes, they give him little chest compressions and breathed into his mouth. So how? So a dog's mouth, their snout is long. They don't have cheeks. So they can't hold, a dog can't even hold food in his mouth.
Right. Well, that's so very true. So air? What you do, this is obviously with a dog that has a full muzzle. With the brachy dog, you just put your whole mouth over them and you just kind of breathe in and, you know, try to cover their whole mouth, their whole nose and everything and face. With your mouth.
And you can pinch it closed, pinch their nose closed.
No, because the mouth is probably too much. You still want to breathe into the nose, though, with a brachy dog. It's so tough to get regular air into them anyway.
Their mouth is so big. Their mouth is the size of a melon.
Well, you cover it.
Like if you were going to shout, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. You put your hands
but
on
so what you
mouth.
Do is with a dog with a regular muzzle, you put your hands, you wrap your hands around the lips, and so you're holding the muzzle in place.
Right.
And
like a muzzle. Your hands are a muzzle.
Right. Like an actual muzzle.
Yeah.
You're not squeezing on it, you're just holding it closed, and more than anything, you're covering the sides.
Like sealing the lips closed.
Right.
Right.
And then you just breathe into the nose as powerfully as you can. And then you just do CPR.
I guess a human's lungs are much, especially a big old firefighter, their lungs are much bigger than a dog's lungs. So that
might
probably help. Especially this is a tiny
little
true. Dog.
That's true. If anything, it probably works better on smaller dogs and things.
Yeah, I wonder if what would that be, the SMFD?
Santa Monica Fire Department.
Yeah, if they include dog resuscitation in their CPR refresher courses. Or if it's just something
that he'd
heard about once.
I don't know. It might be something that there are definitely doggy first aid courses that you can take.
Yeah.
And all those sorts of things. So
yeah, I mean, he seemed to know something about dogs because he's also quoted as saying something little white dog like that, I knew that you had to save right away.
Right.
So yeah, doggy CPR. People should go out and learn that, I guess.
Yeah, and human CPR.
Yeah, I should get a refresher course. Well, I think that wraps up our news for dogs.
Yes, that's it.
So, yeah, it's question time.
It's question time!
Not the British question time.
No.
Huff, 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 huff. No one wants to hear that. Mm-mm. So, our first question comes from right here in Jersey City, because after all, it's mostly our friends listening to this.
Hi, friends.
We're not pretending. And it says, what are your thoughts on dog owners disposing of bags in other people's garbage cans? Signed, Dreading Doo-Doo Downtown.
Well, doo-doo. So, I feel all sorts of ways about this. Because there's all sorts of ways to feel about this, right? So, one is when people do it. You don't want people to put poop in your can because it's annoying and
Sorry, I'm just laughing at the phrase poop in your can.
You don't want people to put poop in your can.
No, you do not.
Because if you don't have a bag in there, or if the trash guys, when they throw the cans, if it comes out because it's not in a big trash bag, it's just loose. There's all sorts of problems. Or if people don't tie the bag, then they throw it in and then it gets poop all over your can.
Because we're assuming a platonic poop bag. It is sealed.
Well, no. We can't. We can never assume a platonic poop bag.
No, but we can start from there and then
no,
say.
Okay, no, I'm just telling you. Here we go.
All right,
so that's one way to feels about it.
Yeah.
One way to feels is that it's bad because that poor garbage can. The other way to feel about it is, well, at least it's getting put in a garbage can.
Yeah.
And as somebody who walks a lot of dogs around a lot of streets and picks up a lot of bags of poop, I only do this on very specific occasions, and it's only if A, there are no public trash cans anywhere nearby.
Uh-huh.
because, you know, what else am I going to do with it, basically? And B, I do my best to make sure it's not a recycling can, because that's annoying.
Yeah, that is a real, can we say dick move?
Sure.
Dick move.
Yeah, Richard.
Yeah, Richard. Put it in the garbage can, Richard. There are two different cans.
Yeah, yeah. So that, you know, always do your best to make sure it's not a recycling can. But the main thing is, if you live in a part of a neighborhood where there aren't public garbage cans, then you kind of have to just accept that it's going to happen.
Agreed.
Mainly, if anything, like, at least people are picking up the poop.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
like, I have not done this, but I have seen plenty of people just, you know, they just leave the bags there. Like, that's going to be fine.
This happens, oh my God, this happens on my way to work all the time. There's a guy who picks up the poo.
Yep.
In a bag.
Yep.
Ties a knot in the bag. Platonic knot, like nice and
sure.
Tight. Leaves it in the middle of the sidewalk.
Right.
Like, he figures just someone else is going to pick it up?
Yeah.
Also, inevitably, he gets stepped on and ripped open, and then there's just, like, a bag of... Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. So there's that. So at least they're getting thrown out and picked up.
And so also, as someone with garbage cans that poop other litter gets thrown into...
As property owners.
Right. I think it's fine. It's not ideal. I would always say use the public trash can before using somebody's trash can, but at least it's a trash can. Like, yeah. it's a trash can. It's for trash. It's poop is trash.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I obviously have certain feelings about this because our trash can is full of dog poop. So to me, it's one and the same. Again, just put it in a bag and make sure that the bag is closed and don't put it in the recycling.
Yeah.
And also, you know, given how much people leave garbage just like in our front yard.
Yeah,
our tiny little strip of lawn that people somehow find enough room to put garbage on.
Yeah, I'm just so anti-littering that I just kind of am, so long as it's in a garbage can, I don't care which garbage can it is, or whose garbage can, or where the garbage can is, so long as it's not on the street anymore.
I like how many layers you have to your theory of whether it's okay to throw in someone else's garbage can or not.
Well, I've had a lot of time to ponder it.
I just think it's funny that, you know, growing up in a good Jewish household as I did, I knew that there were 12 different levels of tzedakah, and you have, like, 12 different levels of when to put poop in a can.
Yeah.
I guess you only have, like, 4.
They're not levels they're, like, hurdles that I have to clear.
Yeah, of whether it's okay to do this.
Right. So the first one being no public trash can around for blocks.
Yeah, the first one, so...
Like, if I have to go more than, like, 2 blocks, then I'll just use your
say,
a trash
say
can.
Half a block. No, half a block is fine. I would say a block.
No, I'm willing to cross an intersection.
I'm willing to cross an intersection. I'm just not willing to walk all the way from one end of a block to the other.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
To that, you know, also, at least personally, the quickest way to discourage is to leave the lid on your garbage can.
Oh, well, I do feel that I have thoughts on this, too. I do not like it when people open the lid of my garbage can. That is not cool, especially because they often don't close it and then it can blow away in the wind. But if you leave the lid of your garbage can open and there is dog poop in there, I feel perfectly fine throwing dog poop in there.
Yeah.
You know? At that point, you are doing a public service.
Yeah.
I would not open someone else's garbage can, though.
Right.
I think for any reason. Just because, like, I still consider it theirs. It's not, you know, no one's. You haven't discarded it until it hits the curb. If it's on your property, it's behind, like, you know, your fence or whatever, then you can't go running people's garbage. If you can do, like, a clean, like, toss, that's fine.
Right.
Although, you know, actually, I changed my mind. Forget that. Don't throw dog feces, people.
No.
In any circumstances.
No.
Forget I said that.
Yeah, I'm the one giving the advice here. Don't listen to Ephraim ever.
That should just be, like, a rule of the show, right?
It's a rule of my life.
Yeah, thanks, Eve.
Yeah.
It's gotten you this far.
It's working so far. So no public trash can. Garbage lid has to be open.
Yeah.
And it has to not be the recycling can.
Yeah, I think those are good rules. It makes sense. I think that's very pragmatic.
Yeah, because here's the thing. At the end of the day, like, I get that, you know, you don't want poop in your can if you don't have a dog or a cat or something, so you're not used to, you know, bags of poop.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can get stinky and it's annoying, but it's a garbage can.
It also depends how far into your property it is.
Well, don't keep your garbage can right underneath your living room window.
Yeah, but if you live in, like, you know, a row house in the city, you might not have a choice as to where the garbage can goes, especially if you're a renter.
Yeah.
Although, if you live, this the writer of this does identify himself, Doodoo, does identify himself as a as living downtown.
Mm-hmm.
That suggests to me that there are a lot of garbage cans around.
Yes.
And short blocks.
Yes.
In which case, there's little excuse.
But I would say if you're really against this, if you really don't want this to be done to your garbage can, then get a lid for your garbage can.
A good tight-fitting one.
A good tight-fitting one, and maybe even, like, zip-line one side of it in, so that way it's actually attached
to your
garbage can.
I haven't thought about that in a long time because, you know, you used to have to do that because of raccoons and stuff.
Right.
When I lived in the suburbs.
The same technique.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Works for raccoons. It'll work for random people walking by your house, right?
Yeah, raccoons are definitely smarter than random people walking by your house.
Yeah, and more devious.
Oh, sure. Well, they're wearing masks.
Well, I think that wraps that up. Do we want to go to our next question?
Our next question.
This next one was submitted through our website, pettheoriespodcast.com, where on, I think, almost every page, except not the episodes page, on the other two pages, it's a lean website, there is the question submission form where you can leave your name and email so we can get back to you with any follow-up questions. Not that we've actually done that at this point. Or you could, of course, tweet us at Pet Theories. Or send us a message on Skype at Pet Theories Podcast on Skype. I don't think anyone's done that yet. But this one comes from Shamalala Bob, and it's a question about dogs and boundaries, Eve.
Okay.
Dear Pet Theories, my boyfriend and I just moved. Our lawn doesn't have a fence, and neither do our neighbors. And sometimes our dog gets curious and, you know, stands there waiting around to see if he should move around.
Right.
I'm scared he's going to take off running and not come back. So I'll call him in. Sometimes he doesn't listen. Sometimes he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But once I finally get him in, he knows, you know, I'm angry because he didn't listen. And this has been a problem basically ever since they moved. So will he keep on doing this? Will he start listening? Like, how do they get him to start listening to come again since he seems to have lost it?
Right. So this is a perfect example of what we talk about when I've mentioned how you need to be reinforcing your old obedience and tricks all the time. Especially because it's not just about reinforcement, but it's about bringing it to new situations so that way it's always working. Just because a dog will come when it's in your living room and there's nothing else going on doesn't mean once you get outside. It'll even apply that come means the same thing because come it's a word that was only used inside. What makes you think that it's also a word that means the same thing outside?
Right, so you have to work on that.
Right, so now that you're in a new location, right, especially one that doesn't have a fence, if mm-hmm. you're not, if the dog is used to having a fenced-in yard, so it's not used to having to set boundaries
yeah.
for itself.
And being able to see so far around in every
right?
direction.
Like, the dog does not have a concept of property lines.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not going to know where the neighbor's yard is if there's nothing to differentiate it on its own. So what you want to do is, yeah, you want to start working on come again. If you're worried about the dog, what I would suggest is starting with a 20-foot leash
yeah.
that they sell, not a retractable leash, but just a
like
long,
a big, long
leash.
Nylon leash, like a yeah. big, long one.
Yeah. yeah, not a retractable leash, just one where the dog can, you know, go and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that way the dog can get far away from you, but it's you still have it.
Yeah,
so you
and
don't
you can
have,
reel him back in
you
if you need
to. You
can
reel him back in if you have to, but the dog is not going to run. So you work on come that way just over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And the other big thing is the letter writer mentions that the dog seems guilty when they come in because he can tell that she's upset with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exact wrong thing that you want to do. The dog is listening to you. The dog came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if the two things before that the dog was doing was bad, this is about how we're talking about how it's all about the moment
mm-hmm.
of reinforcement. So the dog came. So even if the two things that the dog was doing before that was not listening, the dog listened and came that time.
And you have
so
to reward them
so
for
the
that.
Time that they listened and showed up, it's yay! Good boy. Thank you so much for coming. What mm-hmm. a good boy. Yay, now you're back in the house and you get a treat and oh, lots of pets and stuff. So
To reward them for the
reward them for coming, because it's a good thing that they came back in the house. You want coming back in the house to be a good thing.
Yeah, because the last thing you want is for them to go, oh no, if I go back, I'm going to get yelled at.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it's funny. That actually, this is so, it's funny. I think I mentioned my barber on a previous show. Don't like this barber. The last time I was there, he said something along these lines. He lives out in Long Island.
Okay.
And his dog ran away.
Right.
Finally came back after 3 days.
Okay.
First thing he did, he smacked the dog.
Right.
And I didn't say anything because he was cutting my hair, and my ability to look like a normal person, not an idiot, was in his hands.
Well.
But what I wanted to say was, if your dog ever runs away again, it's never coming back.
Yeah.
Because it's all it knows is if I go back, I'm getting smacked.
Exactly.
Oh, God, it broke my heart to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't go back.
Yeah, so a good kind of hack, for lack of a better term, if you really need to get your dog's attention and your dog isn't coming and, like, something is...
Dog hacks!
Right. Don't run towards your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Run away from your dog while calling your dog.
Oh, because dogs like to chase stuff.
Yes. And if you run towards your dog's going to think that you're playing a game with them, and they're going to run away from you. But if you have a dog, especially like a herding breed or a retrieving breed or any sort of hunting breed of that sort,
mm-hmm.
if you run away from them while screaming their name in like a happy, upbeat, like, hey, yeah, come we're on, running we're running over here. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good kind of way to get the dog to come towards you.
Yeah.
This is also a good trick if you, say, accidentally drop a leash while out walking a dog, you know, and you can't get it back in time. Just say, hey, dog, we're going this way now. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they don't even notice that you've dropped the leash, and they just turn around and they come with you, and then you're all set.
Yeah, well, they can't see that well, and they're like, well, they seem pretty authoritative.
Exactly. Always, yeah, use your authority in a positive manner, and dogs will be like, all right, let's go hang out with her. Yeah.
Depends really where this person lives and how big this yard is. Because if you're out in, like, you know, the suburbs, you could have, you know, like a 40-foot yard. You could get, like, a 35-foot leash.
Right. Well, if the dog is good enough on a 20-foot recall on the leash, then you can probably start trying on taking him off the leash.
Yeah.
If maybe you can't put up a fence because you're renting or whatever, maybe you can put up some plants or some pots or something along the line to just kind of give your dog a sort of visual clue of how far you want them to go, so that way you can train them on that. So that
dogs are good at that too. Yeah. Like, they're good with, like, doorways and
borders and fences and things.
Yeah,
so if you put something up, even, you know, obviously still work on the recall and everything, mm-hmm. and don't use it as, like, a literal fence, because obviously it's not a literal fence, but it can give your dog an idea of where the border is.
Yeah, it's a goalpost.
It's a goalpost, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a visual cue.
Home base or whatever. Yeah. Don't go past the X.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny because you'll notice, like, dogs obey these rules kind of their own accord in your house if you just watch them. Sometimes I think dogs have OCD or something.
Well, that's why I always say, you know, give your dog as many commands and vocabulary and even just, like, boundaries and rules as possible, because if not, they will make up their own.
That's like Shiba Inus and how if you don't, like, keep them really active, they'll destroy your apartment.
Yes. Well, a lot of dogs are like that, but Shiba Inus will do it in really clever ways.
Well, it's because they get bored, I guess.
Yeah, because they're very smart dogs.
Yeah, they're not good apartment dogs, right?
They're good apartment dogs if you have the time to keep them mentally stimulated.
They're good apartment dogs if you work from home.
Right. They don't need a lot of space, but they need a lot of mental stimulation.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or if you have, like, 3 kids.
Right, because they... Well, actually, they're...
Oh, no, they're not good with... Right. Well, I think they're not good with little kids.
Well, it's the same problem with all herding breeds.
They'll nip at them, trying to herd them.
Yeah, they nip at little kids, which can be difficult. Yeah.
Go this way.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. They do that to adults, too.
Right.
The secret is you got to aim low when you kick. That's what the cows get wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
It took me so long to put that together that the reason corgis are so short is because, like, that's the kicking range
mm-hmm.
of like a sheep or something.
A sheep, yeah. A ram.
Yeah, a ram. Blew my mind, man.
Yep.
Those Scots, they're smart.
Yeah.
Or the Welsh, I guess, are all over. Those Brits and Brits. They're smart folks. And finally, our last question comes from across the rivers from Brooklyn. It comes from Caitlin. It's long. But hey, you know what? We got nothing but time here on Pet Theories. Bandwidth is now cheap. Disk space is now cheap. It comes from Caitlin, and it says, I recently dropped a knife on my foot while cooking.
Okay, good. That's a good clarification.
Yeah, not for fun.
No, okay.
While cooking. Okay. So I guess it slipped out of her hand.
Yeah.
Whew. Which was both extremely painful and very bloody.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the foot's got a lot of stuff going on in
the
foot.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
In the spirit of not bleeding to death on my kitchen floor, I quickly made my way to the hospital, which meant that I had to leave most of my apartment covered in blood. Covered in blood and inhabited by a cat. When I came back, most of the blood was there, but it was pretty obvious that my cat had sampled the gory buffet I had left out for him. Should I be worried? Is it possible my cat has acquired a taste for human blood and will no longer be satisfied by anything else? At what point should I be worried?
Well, I would say if your cat is sniffing your face more than usual. No, this is
I would
hysterical
agree.
And awesome, and I'm so sorry that you almost cut off your foot, but this is great. So the cat has only, there weren't big piles of blood missing, right? Like this is, but the cat only like tasted a little bit.
I mean, it says most of the blood was there. I don't know what that means. I mean, most of the blood is so not specific.
Right,
especially it sounds like there was a lot of blood. I mean,
right,
I
but it's also not
knife,
large amounts of the blood were gone is not what that says.
True. It doesn't say like a couple sips were taken. I'm not imagining like Catherine the Great bathing in a bathtub of blood here, but I mean, cats are cats.
Right. Well, that's part of it. So the cat is obviously going to sniff and probably try it because it's a cat and they kill things all the time.
Yeah.
So the cat is definitely like a carnivorous in a way that even dogs aren't, because dogs are omnivores. And
cats are pure carnivores. Like
I believe they
pretty much don't eat anything that's not meat.
They eat some grass and some stuff sometimes, and you know, catnips and stuff. But yeah, they.
Okay, so they get high and make themselves throw up sometimes, but otherwise just eat meat.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way to go. I guess that's the that's like the paleo diet. Right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's one version of it. This is the Neanderthal method. So, yeah, I would say to not be horribly worried for the cat. Like, I'm sure the cat is fine.
Not psychotic. I mean,
well,
not any more psychotic than cats normally are.
Right. More that this probably did not turn it into a werecat.
Yeah, but
would that be werecat, or would it be like cat human?
Were just means person. Were means man.
So yeah, so then it'd be werecat.
It'd be a werecat, but no, because no, that would be if this woman had bitten her cat, then the cat would turn into a werehuman. This is drinking human blood. That's like
it's a cat vampire.
That's like a cat pyre.
Okay, so I don't think you have a cat pyre now. Now that we've determined all of this,
I don't think you have a cat pyre either. But that's a shame.
Yeah.
That'd be
well,
cool.
Pay attention and see if, you know, at night it turns into a cat bat.
Well, how did they know when Benicula was a vampire? If your cat turns pale and has red eyes, that might be indeed a cat pyre. And I would just say, like, start going to bed with either like, a bag on your head or just a surgical mask that's really crinkly. So if they attack your face, you can hear it before any real damage is done.
But yes, to the question. So I don't think you need to be worried, but in terms of your cat has probably always had a taste for human blood. So I don't think this is new, being that it's a cat. And at what point should you be worried? Probably when the cat is like, you know, tying the cartoon neckerchief around its neck and getting ready with a little knife and fork at the foot of the bed to like, you know, nibble on your toes.
Yeah, if you see a thought bubble where like there's you, but then it magically turns into like a turkey coming out of the oven.
Right, or if it's like if the cat sets up like a giant kettle.
Chopping carrots.
That's when I would be worried. But no, I think this is all fine. It's horrible, but I think it's all fine. I hope your foot is okay.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear about your foot. Thank you for listening. God. And thank you for your question.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a lot of blood. All right, well, I think that's the end. We're going to have to leave our question time on a rather gory note, but hey, man, if you have more scary, bloody, gory stories, that would be awesome. In fact, if we get enough, we'll save them up for a Halloween episode.
Ooh, Halloween episode.
Yeah.
Then it won't just be about bats. So if you don't want an episode to be all about bats and want it to be about cool, gory cat stuff instead, send us your cool, gory cat stories.
Yeah, or dog stories.
Or dog stories. I mean, or llama stories.
Yeah, they bite. Although, if people don't send in their scary cat stories, I will take that as a sign that they do want me to do a Halloween episode all about bats.
That's fair.
Which I will gladly do.
See.
There's some wonderful video. I think Pet Theories might have retweeted it about, it was just footage of vampire bats walking around on four legs. Apparently the only kind of bats in the world that do that are vampire bats.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Because I guess they have to crawl up to your neck to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
Bats really don't do well on the ground at all. Right?
Okay.
They can kind of shimmy a little to sneak up on like a scorpion or something.
Okay,
eat it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just the vampire bats of like South America and Central America. I guess because flapping down and landing on someone, that'll wake them up.
Right.
So they come down, they land over there, and they're tiny little bats, the vampire bats. Because after all, if you're going to latch onto someone and suck their blood, you can't be a big old thing.
Right.
Right. Can't be like a tiger eating you.
No. Wait, you keep referring to it as though they're going after people. I thought they mainly went after cows and things.
I'm saying like if you were a cow.
Okay. Well, you know, you're like talking about like a dude, you know, sleeping on his bed.
Oh, I mean, I'm just imagining me being bitten by a vampire because I want to become a vampire.
Okay. Yeah. Continue.
Okay, so they'll land nearby,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll kind of like walk up to you like Gary Oldman and Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula, and then you know they don't actually suck the blood out; they bite you and then they lap it up a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, there was some footage of that of them walking along on like a treadmill. It was super awesome. It's just a gif.
Great.
Sorry, I'll stop talking about bats now.
It's okay.
This has been Ephraim's Bat Eve.
Hey!
And I think that brings us to Beyond Sid. Holy.
Oh, okay, great.
Is it a trick or a tip this week?
This week it's a trick. We're going to learn how to make our dogs spin in circles. Literally, not like metaphorically.
Is that okay?
Yeah, well, not like constantly, just like do a 360.
What if the dog just throws up everywhere? What if it's like really, what if it's like me, but a dog? And it's like, oh, I'm nauseous. That's me.
Well, you can turn around.
Did you see how I sat down on this chair?
That's true, but you weren't trying to turn around, you were trying to sit.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So how do these dogs pirouette then?
The cue that we're using this week is spin, but
nice and short.
Nice and short.
Better than
simple.
Pirouette.
Better than pirouette, unless you're French.
I think even if you're French, you probably want like a monosyllabic dog command. All of a sudden, my mom walked into the studio.
Hello, dog.
Oh, hey, mom. Hello, dog.
So yeah, a nice short command. The hand signal is typically just making a small circle in front of your waist, perpendicular to your waist.
Like as if you were drawing a circle on the ground with chalk.
Yes.
Put in front of you.
Yes.
Okay.
For the hand signal. So there are five different techniques that you can use to elicit a behavior from a dog to train it to do a trick.
Okay.
And this particular trick uses the luring method.
Well, hold real quickly, what are the other four?
So there's the luring method, mm-hmm. there's the modeling method, there's mimicking,
mm-hmm.
there's capturing, and then there's shaping.
Okay.
Okay. Not all methods are good for all tricks or all dogs or all people. You know, you use one method for one type of trick, another method for another type of trick, etc. So this trick uses luring. Luring is when you use the trick itself to physically move and guide the dog into the position that you want them to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So luring guides the head, and then the body of the dog.
Oh, because you have like
follow.
A treat in your hand, and it's following the treat, and you're thus creating the action you want them to do.
Right, you're luring the dog into a circle.
Right.
As
opposed to a couple episodes ago, we talked about back, because we were talking about like things that might not come naturally. And I said, like, how do you get a dog to back up when they don't really ever do that on their own? And you said, like, you have to kind of get in their space to make it happen.
Well, that's actually sort of shaping
because you're shaping
behavior.
Their space.
Right. Because you're like you're shaping their body. So you're like physically moving their body.
Okay.
So shaping. Like so shaping is like when you press a dog's butt down to get it to sit.
Right.
Basically.
No, but this is more just sort of getting walking up to them and then so that they back away. So that's more like not shaping. That's like what would that be? That would be what were the other ones?
Luring, modeling, mimicking, capturing, and shaping.
Oh, I guess that is shaping then.
Capturing, because when they do it, you're like, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You sort of create a reason why they would do something.
Right, yes.
And then saying, bam, that's the thing I want you to do.
Right, exactly.
So in this case, though, rather than doing it through your, like, you're moving your body around, you're doing it by luring them around with the treat.
Right. So you don't use a clicker on this trick. You don't need one. The treat itself is the marker. So there's no need for a clicker, since the treat is given the moment that the correct behavior happens.
Okay, what do you consider correct behavior? One entire evolution? Or I guess whatever you want it to be.
You know, you can try and see if your dog will just do it all in the first go. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
You know, some dogs are fine turning in circles, and so they're like, oh, this thing, cool, fine.
Right.
So, you know, go for a full circle the first try. No harm in it. But yes, be prepared that you might have to basically work on smaller degrees of the circle.
Well, I'm trying to think of how little you can cut a circle while it's still being clear that it's a circle. I'd say like half. Gonna do half, start with like half a circle.
Right. It seems... You know, they're still turning their head and their shoulders and the front of their body.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need the dog to necessarily turn all the way around to start being successful. So this is all one fluid motion.
Right. Donut, basically.
Yep. So you start with the treat in your dominant hand, right in front of the dog's nose and mouth. Okay. So like you show them your super cool, you know, high value training only treats that you use. And so you put it right in front of the dog's nose. And then you basically just lead the dog around in a circle.
Right. And once it does as much as you want, let's say a circle, you give it the
then
treat.
Then you just, you know, pop it right in right
like,
its mouth.
Yeah, you're so good. You're so smart. Right.
Right. So you go either clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on whichever you'd prefer to start. Or actually, whichever way, if you notice your dog does it easier clockwise and counterclockwise, then start, obviously, with the direction.
And don't
that's
switch it up.
Dog.
It's two different.
No, those are two different tricks.
The other direction is a different trick.
An important thing in terms of realizing with doggy vocabulary is that clockwise and counterclockwise are two totally different commands as far as your dog is concerned.
Well, yeah. I guess because it's two different things it could do and it wants to know which one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we call counterclockwise in our household Crazy Ivan.
After the hunt for Red October.
That's courtesy of Damien. Right into the show, Damien. I'm sure you got questions. You've had many pets over the time I've known you.
So yeah, so you just start leading the dog's head around and basically hope that his body will follow. But you start with like, you know, small, slow, kind of tighter circles.
Mm-hmm.
So that way the dog is kind of, you know, momentum is kind of forcing their butt to swing around. You know, you just keep turning their head and they're just, you know, they're going to have to swing their butt around to just keep going. That's what you're learning. That's what you're hoping for is just basically
Dog already, like, chases its tail?
Then maybe...
Can you use this trick to, like, teach them not to do that?
Well, then, you know, maybe then capturing is a better way for you to train this.
And then you can
trick.
Be like... You know, stop, Sally, don't stop. Spin.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
No spin.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Can a dog, do they get the no plus X? Like, I imagine dogs don't have grammar, but can they put together, if they know no, you know, and like one thing, one word Olive knows other than her name is no.
Right, no, yeah. I would say so, because definitely when you teach a dog to speak or bark, that tends to be the easiest way of getting them to stop. One of the easiest ways to get them to stop barking is to teach them what barking is.
Yeah.
And then just
so that
say
way you can,
stop.
You can capture it and then say, don't do that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You want to start with small, tight circles. And if your dog doesn't want to do the full circle, you may be moving your hand too far away from them too quickly. So you really want to stay right on the tip of their nose, right in front of their mouth. You know, you want them to basically be able to like lick it through their teeth, lick your fingers, but not actually grab it.
Smell it.
Right, exactly. And you know, be willing to go, you know, a quarter rotation of a turn at a time. If you can't get your dog to do the full circle, you know, reward him for doing a quarter and then work on that for a while and then, you know, half and etc. Once they really get the hang of it, then you can expand to the dog turning in wider circles, you know, really sort of walking walking around promenade. In a circle. Yeah, promenading.
If you can get that to transition to running a lap.
Like on a round track?
Yeah, well, I mean, with Olive, she loves running circles around the dog park when we're in like a fenced-in dog park, pretty much anywhere. And it's a great way to get a lot of energy out of her, especially if we're going to go on like a long car trip or something.
Right.
But sometimes it is impossible to get her to start because it's hard to explain to a dog run. You know, you can run after them and turn it into a game, and sometimes that works, and sometimes they don't care.
Right.
And but it's hard to, like, especially without another dog there, to be like, hey, let's chase. It's hard to get them to run.
Right.
Sometimes. Which is a big deal when, like I said, you're about to go on a big car trip.
Mm-hmm.
You could work on getting that to be a running in a circle to be
sure.
a command.
Sure.
That might be really useful on road trips.
It might be. That might be one worth the...
We haven't gotten any road trip questions, man.
Well, right in with your road trip questions.
Yeah, send us your road trip questions. I'm sure people have gone on road trips with their cats. What's etiquette for being on a long road trip with a friend and her cat?
Don't make eye contact with the cat.
Ever?
Well.
You make eye contact with a cat?
Yeah,
will
sure.
Will they kill you in your sleep?
Yes. But that's better than them killing you when you're awake.
Depends if you wake up.
Well, then they'd be killing you when you're awake.
No, because you can kill someone in their sleep and then have them wake up
nope.
in the process.
Nope.
Yeah.
That's not killing them in their sleep.
I mean, it's all the same to you.
No, because now you're awake.
So you're saying that you've failed at killing
yes.
someone when... Okay. Well.
On that note, that's it for this week's episode. Make sure to write in with more questions and comments and things so that way we have a next week's episode.
Yeah, we really can't do the show if we don't have questions, so please send them in. You can tweet them to us at Pet Theories. You can email them to us at pettheoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us, as I said, a question on our site. There's a form there that just goes straight to the same place that the email goes, which is, again, pettheoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us a question on Skype. You can, like, tag us on SoundCloud, although don't do that. I will probably never see that.
Yeah.
We are on SoundCloud, though. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, that's awesome.
We're also on TuneIn and Google Play. And are we up on Stitcher yet?
Yes.
We are everywhere that you can find the podcasts and where you are listening to them, you should subscribe and rate them.
Absolutely. I think there's actually a new podcasting platform that I just read about today that I didn't even know existed. We'll be up on there in a little bit. I can't remember what it's called. It had the word cast in it.
There you go. We'll be there too. And then subscribe and rate to us there as well.
Just good karma, man.
It helps people find the show.
It helps people find the show. So thank you so much for listening. As always, Pet Theories was compiled, written, composed, edited, and generally put together with glue and spit by Eva Mehta and Ephraim Oshinsky. It was edited by probably me and had assistance by some dogs. Today we have Sally. She's sleeping right next to us. Hi, Sally.
Pet Theories is presented by Ear Kitty Kitty Productions,
which we swear exists. And we will see you all next week.
Goodbye.